With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Want your most burning finance and investing questions answered? Here's a podcast you should be listening to. Courtesy of Acast Recommends.
Are you ready for some personality in your personal finances? Hi, I'm Janice Torres Rodriguez, Latina money expert and host of the award-winning podcast, Yo Quiero Dinero. On this show, we're serving up POC-friendly personal finance knowledge, always with a side of sass. We're not talking about avocado toast and lattes on this show. We've got real, relatable personal finance knowledge that makes you feel seen, heard, and finally understood. Consider me your super cool, slightly risque, but always honest financial fairy godmother. Together, we'll tackle dinero in a fresh new way so you can finally become poderosa with your dinero. Check out our weekly podcast episodes at YoQuieroDineroPodcast.com or subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
You're listening to the Sans Pants Network,
home of comedy,
culture,
adventures,
and ghosts.
Hello and welcome to Scaredy Boys, a podcast where three cowardly friends discuss horror movies. I'm Damien.
I'm Sean.
And I'm Tom.
And for this episode, we watched Men. Men is a 2022 folk horror film written and directed by Alex Garland. In the aftermath of a personal tragedy, Harper retreats alone to the beautiful English countryside, hoping to find a place to heal. But someone or something from the surrounding woods appears to be stalking her. What begins as simmering dread becomes a fully formed nightmare, inhabited by her darkest memories and fears.
Men.
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 Boys.
Yes. Boys Two Men, famous R&B soul a cappella group.
I'm happy to go down that. I'm happy to go down that rabbit hole.
Yeah, let's just chat Boys to Men for the next half hour.
Let's talk about Boys to Men because Men.
Yes.
You know what?
Interesting film.
I'm starting to think we're not as good as I thought we were.
I didn't believe it was possible until Alex Garland transported it onto the screen.
I would like to say on behalf of women everywhere, thank you, Alex Garland. let's get the elephant out of the room.
Yeah.
The movie is insane, but also what is more insane is that Alex Garland sat down and was like, yeah, being a woman's must suck.
Mm.
And like, I agree, it must be hard and shit and there's lots of things, but hey, maybe Alex... Maybe that's not your story to tell.
Yeah. He is interesting because his previous one was Annihilation, which is a very female-driven film.
Yeah, yeah.
What's going on in that man's brain?
Well, look, I have no
problem. What's going on in the brain of men?
I think what's going on in the brain of men is that inside every man is a back pussy waiting to be freed.
Mm.
There it is. First mention
preach,
of back pussy.
Brother.
Are we this week's episode brought to you by Scaredy Men?
Scaredy Men, yeah.
Yeah.
We're the Scaredy Men.
No, in this case, I'm happy to be boys.
Yeah.
Look, I'm happy to be Scaredy
Although
Boys.
Although the boy was still a bit
the boy
of a
was,
freak.
The boy had a man's face. Honest.
The boy was a cunt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Boy was not a back cunt, just a cunt.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm.
What a film.
The point about Alex Garland, though, just to jump back for a sec.
Sure. Like,
I have no qualm with a male director making a...
Exploring feminist issues.
Well, yeah, or making a film where it's, you know, a lot of female characters and it's female stories. And that's awesome and you should do that. Absolutely.
Mm.
I think the issue is that this movie, you just imagine, what if either one of the writer or the director had been a woman?
Yeah.
Right? And then you go, maybe it explores the subtleties of... Because effectively, we saw this movie at the Kino, Dusk Kino together as a group.
Mm.
And I was driving home from Dusk Kino with my partner, who is a woman.
Mm-hmm.
And we were driving along. And she was describing her qualms with the film and things she would have liked to have seen them do better. And it was like, they should have hit this more subtly and they should have done this where you're not really sure. And basically, every example she gave was just lived experience that she has as a woman functioning in society. And I think if you're going to make a movie that's trying to comment on that, maybe... This movie's about as subtle as a sledgehammer to it.
But did you say to her, I've just watched Men, I don't need your opinion?
I did say that. Yeah. I said, please, babe,
Let me just stroke my mustache for a second while I talk down to you.
Yeah, I don't know. This movie is
fucking
insane.
The subtlety thing that you mentioned, like obviously you talking about your partner saying, oh, if he just brought this subtle little thing in. But like you said, there is no subtlety to this movie. But for me, the experience was like, I didn't realize that until I think we're probably discussing it afterwards. Well, I mean, obviously the imagery at the end is not subtle, but it feels like a movie that is... It feels intellectual. It feels like it's sort of using imagery, and obviously there's so much that's impressive in terms of the way it's made.
Yeah. Yeah.
But the message itself, it so enamored me with all this other stuff that the message itself is like, hold on, one, that's not subtle, and two, that's not new. That's not like a new idea that, hey, no. Men create other toxic men. Like,
I guess, you know what? I've changed my mind.
Five stars?
No. I think you can make this film as a man if you lean more into toxic masculinity. So like Fincher doing Fight Club, right?
Right.
Yeah. Something like that where you lean all the way into toxic men begat more toxic men.
Mm. Yeah.
And it's just as toxic masculinity is bad for men as well as women. It isn't just a...
Yeah, right. Yeah, you know. Yeah.
But I don't know if this movie necessarily nails that.
Here's an example you've seen, Tom.
Yeah.
You've seen the film The Last Duel. Ridley Scott film.
Yes, yes.
Damn, I'm not sure if you're...
No, I haven't yet. Yeah,
but,
yeah.
And weirdly, because it's a Matt Damon and Ben Affleck project, who haven't in the past always been, let's say, smart with the choices and the things that they say about women.
Yeah.
No.
They co-wrote the script and they got, and I'm going to butcher her name and I apologize, but Nicole Hofficina, I think it is. They got her to come in. So that film is broken into three parts, three points of view. And the female character's point of view is written by a woman. So they actually have said, yeah, it'd be great actually to bring a woman in because it's a very tricky subject matter.
Yeah.
But it benefits from it strongly. Like Tom, you would have seen it. The third act is the strongest part of the movie.
It is pretty, yeah.
And they benefit from having the voice of a woman come into it, where Alex Garland's kind of like, I got this.
Yeah.
And it's, to your point, Damo, I think it throws some pretty lovely cinematography. Mm-hmm. Jessie Buckley's a fantastic actress.
She's
Rory Kinnear is sensational in a variety of roles here.
I love that.
And the music,
too.
The sound design is very unsettling and creepy. The music, that sort of like choral chant, the only thing that...
Echoing,
that thing's like creepy, the thing you saw in the trailer. Gets under your skin. And then, by the time you get to the third act, you go, oh, hang on. This isn't that deep or anything.
No,
this is just bullshit.
Yeah.
And surface you come out of it level. Feeling like, that's annoying. Ah. The example I would give is I was so stressed by the... we've talked about this, going into a horror movie, sometimes the scariest part is before you start watching.
Yeah.
So for me, I had this big popcorn. I didn't touch it until there was like 20 minutes to go because I was so stressed. And then I think I reached a level of comfort in the movie where I was like, okay, I can have some now. And then back pussy happened. And I was like, will I ever eat again?
Right. Now's the time to chomp on some popcorn. Yeah, exactly.
I felt very weird chewing popcorn when just back pussy after back pussy was on screen.
Well, no, there's only one back pussy.
Now. Oh, yeah.
There's a lot of man pussy, but there's only
one
back pussy.
For some reason in my head, there's heaps.
Tom, can you rank your favorite pussies in this movie? No.
the stone one in the... I think... We talked about this afterwards, and I think the folk horror elements early on, and before you know what's happening, it's really interesting. Once the game is up, it immediately climbs up its own back pussy.
Yeah, so to me, it's literally like the midpoint, right? Literally the first half of this thing, I think, is an incredibly proficient and affecting folk horror story that I was fucking loving, if I'm honest. Like you were saying, the cinematography and the sound... Alone, it was a beautiful English landscape. It felt so threatening while also being gorgeous. The colors were fantastic. The colors even from like her flashbacks to remembering when her emotionally manipulative husband was sort of, you know, when he potentially committed suicide / accidentally died. Questionable area. Yeah, their fight. The oranges and the glows from that in the English. Like all of it was fucking phenomenal. And then they bring in that score, that sound of, the echoing. And then that is layering on top of this sort of already big tension we're feeling. The guys following her up the old rail track or whatever it was. It was fucking amazing. Obviously, we knew the Green Man was coming in there at some point. I was just like, oh, this is everything I've wanted. Like ever since we watched... the other folk horror, the old school folk horror one.
Wicker Man.
Yeah. Ever since Wicker Man, part of me has weirdly yearned for another English folk horror story. And I thought, oh, fuck, this is going to be it. This is going to be really interesting. And then literally at that midpoint, after all that great build-up, she comes back to the house. Obviously, then we're seeing all the different Rory Kinnears taking place. And then once she's back at the house, and then it's just full nightmare mode. It's purposely meant to be, this is her nightmare made flesh.
Yep.
And all that other stuff, it is completely forgotten about. It's almost like unnecessary to the rest of the plot that takes place from there, because it almost feels disconnected. Hmm. Like, I don't understand like why the landscape being scary ties into how the men are scary, other than I guess the landscape was nice up until a man entered it.
Yeah,
I suppose you could make the claim there. But again, it was done so wonderfully. I was like, fuck, I'm loving this. And then it stopped. And we got a completely different movie for the second half.
Yeah. And also in that second half, I just don't think he's got a firm handle on... On the one hand, it's very simplistic.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, this isn't deep at all. This is just like in your face. The metaphor is in your face.
But that's okay sometimes.
Yeah. That is fine. But it's also kind of like there are ways to look at it and be like, is this just a fever dream nightmare and nothing is actually happening? Or did things happen? And then her friend shows up and it's like, well, there's blood everywhere. There's the car crash.
Yes.
There's all this. She's got blood on her hands. So yeah, it did happen.
It did happen.
Absolutely bizarre. And at no point from memory does she ever have a moment where it's like, why do you all look the same?
Yeah.
So it's kind of like, so are they not the same guy then? Is that just, she is seeing that appearance?
No, I think that's, outwardly, just a, that's just a stylistic choice.
Outwardly though, is she, you know, have a bunch of people died, a bunch of different people, or are they all Rory Kinnear?
So Sean, it's because all men are inherently the same. That's the,
yeah, but that still doesn't answer the question. Like,
no,
it's okay to say that.
Yeah,
right?
In the world
that's
of the film.
That's his thing. That's the message he wants to get across. That's fine. But in the world of the film, are they that, or have a bunch of different men in that village all died,
right,
and we've just seen the one face?
I think it's different.
Because she never has a moment where she's like, hang on. She does. There's a bit with the priest one where I think she says, doesn't she say, what the fuck are you?
Right.
Which I've found to be such a baffling thing, because you wouldn't say that to someone unless something is wrong.
Right.
Well, like, when, if someone's, you know, breaking into, says, my, it's home. When he says that it's her, basically, is like, well, you should have forgiven, like, implying that it's her fault. And
yeah, but
she says,
wouldn't your question be, who the fuck are you? Who are you, not what are you?
Well,
when
think,
she says,
again,
what are you, it makes me go, hang on. Is she now suddenly aware that there is something very supernatural about this village?
I think it's purely a stylistic choice.
Well, then it's a muddied one, I think.
Well, here's my issue. I think he's got, obviously, like, he's got his great big metaphor. He's on a little dinghy. There's this great big metaphor island that he's heading towards.
Yeah.
He does not have his hand on the tiller. The ocean will take him there, and it's going to take a few waves and a few dips and the sides and all this sort of stuff. But all of it's a bit messy. We're not going in a direct line, because, like, a lot of the imagery that we're seeing, especially in the nightmare sequencing, I'm trying to wonder, like, oh, it must be some level that I'm not smart enough to understand.
Yeah.
Or, like, is it that? Or is it just, like, kind of just random nightmare stuff is happening, men bad and all the rest of it? Like, we're obviously, like, the birthing scene, well, yeah, great, that metaphor can slap you in the face pretty easily.
Yeah.
They're all looking the same thing. But then all the other beats along the way, I'm like, I don't know what I'm meant to be. I'm not connecting the dots that normally I, for good sort of steady filmmaking, where you're like, oh, I see what you've done there. That's fucking brilliant. You've used that line. You've used that piece of imagery. You've used that sound, whatever.
Mm.
Where I just kind of felt like it was a random collection of images and sounds. And I don't really know if there was a deeper level of all of this is tying into our central theme, or this is just random stuff happening up until we get to the birthing scene.
That's right. Yeah. I think you can look at it and go, certainly respect the craft of the filmmaking.
Yeah. Yeah.
Don't respect the craft of the storytelling.
Yes, that's it. Exactly. Yeah.
And it has a lot of similarities to Mother, wouldn't you think?
The worst movie ever made.
Yeah, I know you're not a massive fan.
I hate it.
And it's one that I just don't think about. Someone asked me about it recently and I was kind of like, oh yeah, Mother. Like, I saw it in the cinema.
Oh yeah, I've seen that.
I didn't hate it. Didn't love it. Never really thought about it again.
Right.
But that is a film that sets itself up, and then at a certain point you go, oh, okay, I see what they're doing. And then the third act is just insanity.
Yeah.
It's Mother is exactly the same as Men.
Yeah, right.
Except I think Men is better made. And the reason, no.
You could flip
because,
a coin.
No. Men's better because Mother is a movie. 50% of Mother, sorry. Mother, because it's got an exclamation point because I'm a dumb fucking idiot. My name's Darren Aronofsky. Half
I've
of
been
Mother,
calling you Tom this whole time.
I know.
Dazza.
I'm actually Dazza. Oi. Half of Mother feels like, because he just started dating Jennifer Lawrence for this movie.
Yeah.
And he's a lot older than Jennifer Lawrence.
Yes. Mm.
Half of this movie feels like him showing off to his friends his hot younger girlfriend. Like, it feels like he feels like the director from Hot Fuzz who casts the girl that he's sleeping with as Juliet, and she's a terrible... Not that Jennifer Lawrence is a terrible actress, but it just feels like this movie he's kind of made to show off her and be like, isn't she beautiful? And she's so hot. And then also a movie where he's like, this is really deep. It's like, no, we get it.
Yeah.
Javier Bardem's God. This is, we get
Mother
it.
Is a really small, simple idea.
Yes.
That is like one of those movies you watch and go, make a short film, mate.
Mm-hmm. Well, no, but you can
write a short story.
You can take.
You could do it, but he didn't do it in a way that satisfied.
No,
yeah, right. Feature length.
Yeah. That's why I think Men is stronger, because it feels like he's trying. Mother doesn't feel like Aronofsky's trying. It just feels like he's doing a bit.
This is recency bias, I think. You haven't watched Mother for probably 5-6 years.
But I enjoyed Men. I didn't enjoy Mother watching it at all.
Yeah, yeah.
Yours is a baffling mind, though.
It's true.
Because I put this to you.
Yes.
They're both shit.
Can I ask you guys this, though? For both of these examples, obviously, like, they've taken this one sort of central idea, let's call it a metaphor, and they've taken the metaphor and made it real, and they've taken it to the nth degree. They've made it really extreme. Do you think if instead they had simplified it and the metaphor wasn't so actualized and actually real and in our face and everything like this, if it was like, even for this one, yeah, they all kind of look like brothers instead of literally being the exact same guy. And maybe, you know, there's a grandfather, a father and a son, and they all kind of, you know, none of them have mothers, weirdly. It's almost like they've birthed themselves. We don't actually visually see them birth themselves.
Better movie.
If it had taken a few steps back, still kept the metaphor, but kept it within reality instead of, like you said, the nightmare sequence where we're like, is this happening or is this not? But then obviously a friend sees a trail of blood, so yes, weirdly.
Yeah.
Like, to me, I think metaphor is exactly that. It's an example amplifying another point, not just that point made real.
Yeah.
I agree.
I think also if it had have put its whole back pussy into the folk elements,
yeah,
then I think you can, because I don't hate the theatricality of having Rory Kinnear play every man in the village.
Yes.
But how much more powerful would that have been? Because I went into this movie knowing that he was playing all
the men. Yeah, yeah.
I thought they would have been a greater effort to make him look different. There should have been ones that just didn't even look like Rory Kinnear, but he's still playing them. Or maybe slightly. Like, I like your idea of having slight resemblances, but it's like from like the second or third one you meet, you're like, oh, okay, they're not going to make much of an effort, are they?
No.
Like,
well, and then once we see the kid, where it's like,
the weirdest looking fucking kid ever.
Right. And like, I almost feel like they've done that somewhat deliberate. Like, it's meant to be a little bit unsettling to
me. I think it's shit enough that it's deliberately.
Yeah, I think so too.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's meant to be like, you get that it's the same guy. Because his performances are sensational.
He's fantastic.
The mannerisms and everything. Like, and here's one thing I did kind of like. So I read something about how like all Rory Kinnear purposely was trying to do, like, here are the different ways men can be toxic. We've got, like, you know, obviously the
different archetypes of
the different archetypes. Toxicity. Yeah, without sort of leaning real hard into like jock.
Yeah.
You know, fucking nerd who thinks he deserves sex or whatever. Like, instead of hitting all those notes, you know, even the priest I think was arguably the best example, where at first he seems quite empathetic and sort of kind towards her, and then slowly it twists into him blaming her for her own, you know, she's the victim, blah, blah,
and
blah.
And then being a full-blown rapist
for
by the back half.
Yeah, and then even, like, the kid is, like, just straight up is an arsehole, toxic shithead, and then the guy, I can't remember the name, who runs the actual Airbnb.
He's the most interesting one, and this is the point that my partner, when we were driving home, she was saying, there's a point in it where it feels like he's going to be, like, he seems like a nice dude, but maybe he's saying fucked things.
Yeah.
And she was like, they should have leaned heavier into that, where she starts doing this thing of being like, oh, no, I'm imagining it.
Mm.
I'm imagining it. He didn't actually say that.
Yeah.
Whereas
they never gave you that sort of, that rope to sort of be like, there was no ambiguity to it at all. It was kind of just a very flat, here it is.
Yep.
Yeah. And that, like I said, they wooed you a little bit with some of the other stuff. The craft elements of filmmaking, but they didn't really. Like, it's not a very filling meal, is it, this movie?
Yeah.
Can I ask a question too? Did you both know Rory Kinnear was doing all the roles?
Yes.
Yes. Yeah.
So I did. I talked about this movie with Billy from the We Watched the Thing podcast.
Yeah.
He watched the whole movie. He didn't realize it's the same fucking guy.
So maybe it did work.
Maybe.
Shit.
Must have just been some major face blindness, I think.
I'd love to know if anyone outside of Billy has had that same experience.
Yeah, because when he told me that, that was crazy.
Yeah.
I was like, holy shit. Yeah, because I knew about it going in, but even if I didn't, I would have picked up on it.
Like, he's just going, oh, they've cast a weird looking kid there.
I said to him, didn't the kid baffle you completely? He goes, I just thought it was really shit, like, I don't know, I just thought it was really shit effects or something.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
That is very funny.
But Alex Garland, there was one person.
Hey, you got him, Alex.
Got him.
You did it.
Well done.
You didn't break the makeup budget.
Also, Alex, congratulations on feminism.
Yeah.
You did it. You won feminism.
Proud of you.
Just on Alex funny, Garland.
Sorry,
Ex Machina, really great film.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah. Annihilation, pretty good too. Like,
I love Annihilation.
We should probably do it for this show at some point.
Yeah.
It's a good film.
It's really good. He's Sunshine, the script of that. He's the writer for that. Obviously, 28. We should do 28 Days. We should do, honestly, we could do all, we could justify doing every single one of Alex Garland's films for this podcast, except maybe X. You could justify Ex Machina.
You could justify it, yeah. But yeah, definitely 28 Days Later. So they're
definitely Sunshine, too.
He teams up quite well with Danny Boyle as director.
Yeah.
28 Days Later, Sunshine.
He's an interesting cat.
I listened to an interview with him and maybe I read it, and he was saying he doesn't even really enjoy directing.
Right.
He does it more out of a place of, I've written this thing that I love and I don't want someone else to fuck it up by making bad choices.
See, that's interesting because I've read it something else with him where he really made me quite enamored of him, where he talked about like, anytime if our movie's good, it's not because of me, it's because everybody around me and I just listen to them, I consider them all experts, rah, rah, rah.
I wonder when that was done.
Yeah.
This was a very recent one where he was kind of like, I'm burnt out by it, and he doesn't like the social aspect of directing.
Oh, fuck.
I think he's a shy guy who doesn't really like to, you know, directors sometimes have to be quite strong and have to, you know, really take action and tell people what they want, and I don't think that's not his natural role. He says it's almost like a performance for him. He has to get himself up to do that on top of all his other directing responsibilities.
Right.
And so I think, he was sort of implying, I'll be happier to maybe just go back to doing scripts or writing novels again, all that sort of thing.
Interesting.
Interestingly, though, he does, as this movie came out, he was already into production on his next film, which I think is called Civil War with Kirsten Dunst.
Right.
Yeah. But you watch this movie and you go, man, I wish he'd had the time to absorb what people say about
right.
it and then
yeah.
maybe take on. It's hard to learn stuff sometimes if you immediately launch into the next project.
Yeah. It's forgotten.
So any of the shortcomings of Men perhaps might exist in his next film as well.
Well, it depends,
though. He hasn't really taken the time to learn. He may have learned it, but I think there are sometimes when you get outside voices say, hey, what about this? You can learn a bit more.
Yeah. My argument, though, is Civil War going to tackle subject material that maybe he lacks a lived experience at all? I don't know.
Yeah.
Who knows?
We can assume what that movie's about, but we don't know.
Not great. Yeah. It could be, like, honestly, we assumed what we thought this movie was going to be about. And then there's a 15-minute sequence in which men climb out of other men's pussies.
Yeah.
Sometimes feet first out the mouth. Was it feet first out the mouth?
It was the mouth. Yeah.
What was the fear factor going into this for you guys? Because I know for me, I think I watched like the teaser trailer.
Yeah.
And I don't really like to watch trailers, obviously, because they show so much now.
Too much, yeah.
But also just frightened of it. Like I was really, I just had that image of the tunnel and her in the tunnel and I'd heard that sound and I was just like,
and then the guy standing up and then running towards it.
And I was just like, this movie's going to stress me the fuck out.
Yeah.
And for a long time it did.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds. And they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Yeah, well, let's ask the question then. Were we scared?
I was peak scared at the tunnel scene.
Yes.
There's that shot from behind her as she's standing at the foot of the tunnel, the entrance, and the camera sort of does that thing where it moves in and then blackness sort of takes over.
That's so good.
And the sound just disappears for a moment.
Yeah.
It's just horrible. And then the echoing of her doing the whatever it is, it's like, and that just bouncing off.
I fucking
love
it.
That whole sequence.
Yeah.
I was like, that's, you know, when we have these moments, fuck this show.
Me
probably looking over at you.
Glaring.
A few seats down, just being like, motherfucker.
I'm chomping on a chalk top of oblivious.
I think definitely in the early on, and the tension of it is pretty full. And even the first couple of scenes, that great scene where she's on the phone and she and the guy's walking around the house and she doesn't know he's there.
Paint on screen.
And it's broad daylight.
Yeah.
And it's terrifying because you're like, look, turn around.
It's classic suspense of we know something the character doesn't, and we're just like yelling at the screen waiting for them to recognize it.
They don't give you the big jump scare that you expect either.
Yeah.
No. I expect she's going to turn at some point and see him in the window with his dick pressed up against the glass or something fucked. And it just never happened. And I was like, what? Garland, what are you doing, man?
Yeah.
What's happening here?
And I will say, like, again, so for me, the scares all came in the first half. The second half was, even though it was more horrific in some ways, because the character almost felt like she'd reached a point where she was accepting and like not giving up per se, but just like going with the crazy. And so naturally I kind of went with the crazy as well. And I kind of was like, I don't even know what's going on. Like my defense is lowered in a way of like, kind of giving in, I guess. Yeah. But in the first half, 100% I was scared. I thought it was brilliantly, brilliantly done for all the reasons we already listed. And even just like, her running back up that path, the rail thing. And then we even see that door of the thing. I think, oh, great, that's going to come back in at the end. Like,
yeah, for sure.
All of it was built in to really deliver on these scares, which obviously then it completely wasted. But one other thing I want to say is something that I think I recognize with this movie, and it's probably happened in other movies, but I don't know that I've necessarily recognized it. And I think it even plays into sometimes my own mental state where she was trying to be happy the whole time.
Yeah.
Her, the character, had something horrific happening, but she'd made the choice to come here, lash out, spend all this time in this beautiful Airbnb, and it was fucking stunning. And even though things kind of kept going wrong, she was like, you know, and her friend's like, do you need me to come? No, I'll be fine. It's okay. Look at how beautiful the house is. I'll give you the tour now. Like, I love this idea of like, she's unsettled. She's obviously grieving, plus also bitterly angry and like all these other emotions, but she's trying to keep maintain this like placid harmony within herself that I think all of us are sort of encouraged to sort of, that's the thing we do. We all expect us to be like, quote unquote, happy, or at the very least constantly like content, I suppose, or like playing to the point of like, of course I'm so happy. Look how great everything is, right? So the reason I found that really affecting was because I've had that emotion more in terms of just like, I'm just in a bad mood today, but I'm not allowed to be in a bad mood. My life's pretty fucking great compared to so many other people across all time in history. So I guess I've got to try to maintain this happy, right? Keep that placid calm. And I find that like that conflict within yourself quite strong some days where you're just like, nah, maybe I should just give in to this bad mood and just be a bit fucking grumpy for a while. Yeah. And then I can be genuinely happy after that. But while you're trying to balance the two, you're kind of just in this weird state of uncomfortable. And I think taking that, but using fear instead of just a bad mood, being like, no, I kind of should be afraid, but I'm going to try to force myself above it and to keep this happy. Like that discomfort I really felt in this movie, and I thought it was more palpable because of it. And then especially once we know, no, something is actually seriously wrong. There's this guy walking around your house. You need to do something. Yeah, it sort of really added all these different layers to it.
Were you a scared boy, Tom?
Of the movie? It got like, like you guys said, the opening sequences, the opening part of the film and the tunnel sequence and even the first night when there's just a guy and you realize the door's like slightly, she hasn't locked the door and there's so many stressful beats.
And the phone.
Yes.
The first time the phone flickers and it's this horrible twisted face. There was a guy like a few rows in front of us who just was like, oh, bloody hell.
Yeah, that's right.
And it was like the first of the scariest, like the movie hadn't even started
yet. That
was
good though, because that relieved a little bit of tension. Yeah. It was like, this guy.
He's, like, he's all us. Of us. He's us. Yeah. Hey, mate, you should listen to a podcast called Scaredy Boys. I think there are scares in it for sure, but I think they get lost by the time the movie ends. One of the more interesting sort of scary tense scenes is that night scene where he tries to break into the house.
Yes.
And eventually throws the stool through the
window.
I love that. And I love that they do something with that they actually don't do with anything else in the film. And it's the only part of the film where they give you evidence that indicates that maybe what she thinks is happening and what is actually happening are on two very different spectrums, in that then the guy who owns the house comes in and it's a dead bird. It's a crow. And the chair's on the ground. And he's like, oh, okay. So then you go, well, no, was it the crow? Was it a man? Was it like what happened? And and that's interesting, but then they never do anything. Because then literally the next beat is he goes outside and disappears.
Can I put this to you guys? Most horror films, the scares are front-loaded. Would you agree with that?
I will
agree.
Or
is that a Sean Carney, I get to the point where I'm like, okay, I know what I'm getting now.
I think it's a bit of both, if I'm honest. But I also think it's front-loaded because The backup one, it has to sort of work towards some sort of resolution.
Mm.
And if it's a tragic horror instead of a happy horror in terms of like Blair Witch, where actually no, our characters.
I was about to say Blair Witch is a perfect example of the inverse of that. The biggest scares of the film happen in the last 20 minutes.
Right, yeah. But if it's I don't even necessarily like the term happy horror. I think it gives it the wrong connotation. Yeah, yeah. I think hopeful horror is always my better.
Horror with a win, maybe?
Horror with a win?
You know what it is? Probably a lot of the time. So our mate Cassandra Page came on the show and talked about how a lot of horror movies in the third act sort of become action movies.
Yes, yeah.
For any of them, scares are front-loaded completely.
Yeah, 100%.
Because you reach a point where probably the character's like, fuck it, I'm just going to have a crack here and try and fight back. And then suddenly, I don't think it's as scary anymore because you're fueled by the adrenaline of the action.
Yeah, yeah. Well, to me, it's literally just three act structure. Yeah. So like it's or even more character arc structure where by the midpoint the character kind of knows what they need to do, but they're not ready to embrace it and do it yet.
Yeah.
And then usually, sort of in that worst point moment, they backslide into sort of the lie they previously believed at the start before learning this new information. That there's this all this doubt, rah rah. So you usually get like one big, really good, more scare in the latter half of the worst point moment, you know, Dark Night of the Soul, whatever you want to call it.
Mm-hmm.
And then obviously eventually they'll win.
Yeah.
If it is a horror with a win. Yep. So like to me it's like, yep, front end is definitely of course because they're losing in the front end, and then at some point in the back end they've got to start to get some tools they'll eventually use to win.
And just not just character too, but I think the front end is the building of atmosphere.
Right. Yeah.
And for us as an audience and a character too, you're not on even ground yet. You're kind of like, well, okay, what's the new environment? What is going on? So I think for me, usually when I get halfway through a movie, I understand the sort of rhythm that the filmmaker is telling the story now.
Right.
So I don't think I can be as scared in the back half.
Mm.
There are exceptions, like Blair Witch that you mentioned.
Yeah. I was about to
above,
say,
so below, found just goes footage. Hard the whole way pretty much.
Yeah. Found footage.
Yeah, found footage is pretty relentless, isn't it?
Because really, the back half of the movie is the event that causes the movie to become found footage.
And
so all the big scares hit towards the back half.
Mm. I talk about rhythm and structure. Found footage is tricky because the camera is so erratic.
Yeah, yeah.
So you're never comfortable, are you, with a found footage? Because it's just at any time that camera can just, I'm going to point over here. And then you don't know what's going on over here.
Correct.
Yeah. So it just creates that feeling of, well, fuck you.
Roy and the Wailing are one where the scares are back, like are consistently all the way through.
They're still
Back. Roy is found footage too.
The
Wailing is not. But there's, those movies where it's drip fed constantly. So you just want to like The Woman in Black, the scares are all the way through.
Yeah. I would say consistent. But again,
That's tragedy.
There's a note of hope, but it's tragedy. I would say it's a tragic horror. Yeah.
Because it builds to a win.
Yeah.
And then it goes nah.
Specifically with this film, this is one of those ones, and it's not at all like The Strangers.
Mm.
But that was an early one we did on this show where the ending of that was so just not satisfying to a point where like, I think that movie would be really high up on our scariest ones of all time,
but
the ending has diluted.
I think the first 40 minutes of that movie.
Yeah, Men is a kind of a movie like that as well, where the first half of it is really unsettling, it's a bit fucked. But because of how silly it gets at the end, you're like, you feel a bit shit. You're like, how did I ever let this get under my skin? You know,
sure.
It's got that sort of vibe.
And even like, this is where I really think it gave up on what it was in the first half, like the echoing sound, right?
Yeah.
So obviously we hear that in the tunnel and then it kind of gets repeated a few times just in the score,
bring that back.
And then it, again, gets completely forgotten. You're like, that was such a great tension builder. Like, and again, what's that meant to be representing? Is it just purely there for aesthetic? Which I guess so. And it was great, but I'd love it if it actually tied more into the story. All right. Did our characters act wisely or foolishly?
It's a really tricky one.
So here's my thinking. It's like I said, I feel like she kind of lent into the nightmare at some point where, yes, she was still fighting back and kind of running and on the, but she was also just kind of given a bit of lip and like she wasn't as like quivering on the ground terrified, which is great. She shouldn't have been. But also because of that, I'm like, I don't know where smart, like wise or foolish fits in.
Because I think she's pretty wise purely because she makes every possible choice she can to stay safe. And a couple of times she cracks it, like she tries to leave.
Mm.
She tries to barricade herself in. She tries to call her friend. She tries to get the police involved. The police do not help.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like there are so many beats where she does everything I think within her power. Like she runs away from that guy. She kind of tells someone, oh, the guy followed me, like calls her friend straight away. And is like, I saw a dude in the woods. It was really fucking weird.
Yeah.
I think every choice she makes is a choice that you would make in that scenario.
Yeah, to try to get out of it.
To try and get out of it. And unfortunately, she's in a horror movie. So the choices do not work.
Not just any horror movie. One that develops in such a baffling way that it's like, it kind of doesn't matter if she acted wisely or not.
No, it's surrealist horror is really what it becomes in the second half. Mm. Where in the first half, it is somewhat grounded, other than obviously everyone looks like Rory Kinnear. But in the back half, it becomes surrealist, in which case, well, there are no rules. Like, of course you can't do anything. Like, literally, you stabbed someone in their arm and it split all the way up their hand, which was obviously very cool to, like, gross, but, like, well done. But then, okay, they keep coming. So, like, yeah, there are no rules anymore, in which case, how can you apply wise or foolish? Because there's no way to win, almost.
You're right. When the world building has no rule base to it, it's kind of, for me, it's just like, what's the runtime of this movie? All right, just hang, sitting tight for 2 hours and then it's over.
Yeah,
hold on. Yeah, there's no like it's, you know, something like Friday the 13th, right? Don't go off alone.
Yeah.
Don't do these things. Don't go skinny dipping. Don't get super high. Like all the classic slasher rules of that film are there. And so you know, you can gauge and go, yeah. But even a thing like Alien, right? Mm. You look at that movie and you go, no, I know the smart choices here. This movie's like, yeah, these are smart choices, but also the rules are that Rory Kinnear. Like, that's it.
Yeah. And you need the rules as an audience for this kind of film, particularly for a horror film, because you want the little wins along the way.
Yeah.
Even if it ends badly, you want to have little successes.
Especially for this character. And, like, I don't know, again, this is where we can step more into the feminist side of things, is like, oh, but guess what? Women often don't get the wins they're deserved. You know, like, you could play on that.
Yeah.
But
she does win, though.
She does win, and she arguably gets, like, obviously stabbing his arm through the male thing or whatever it is. Yeah. Like, there are wins along the way, but ultimately they don't amount to anything almost immediately.
Well, she's killed, by the end of the movie, she's killed the guilt and specter of...
Acknowledged
that, you know, he's gone. And
that's a, like, second last scene of the movie sort of win, though. Like, that stabbing of the hand thing, cutting of the hand... That is, as disgusting as it is, it should be a fucking here we go. She's getting the upper hand now.
Yeah.
But it immediately just doesn't really matter. It just becomes another yuck thing.
Yeah.
She then kicks the priest in the dick.
Yeah, but
we
mean,
all love kicking priests in the dick.
We
sure.
all would. We sure. Could.
It should be an Olympic sport.
They should line them up.
Line them all up.
Yeah.
Get them all there.
On that, what would we do in this situation?
We would line up all the priests.
Kick them in the dick.
We would kick them in the dicks.
Yeah.
So I think in order to answer this question, we probably need to step back a bit and be like, okay, the scenario isn't necessarily men. I think the scenario is we are staying in an Airbnb in a lovely little town where every man looks like Rory Kinnear, and then they start trying to kill us.
Well, I always want to make... I was thinking about this as well, because obviously this is impossible because, hey, guess what? It's three men talking about men. Yeah. We don't want to be Alex Garland.
Hey, we survived. We survived. Case closed.
No, we're dead. Jesse Buckley kills us.
Ah.
I birth you out my back pussy. Oh, you birth Damo out your mouth, and then Damo gets killed by Jesse Buckley.
It's the way we've all wanted to go.
I would love to know what the tally for the back pussy is in this episode. We've said it way
too. Here's another one. Back pussy.
Oh, great. Add that to the tally.
I'm surprised you haven't ripped a back pushy yet, like a Sean Connery. Oh, I know you're dying to,
Tom. That'd be so good. It's like, he just climbed out the back pushy. Oh, Jesse Buckley stabbed him in the back pushy.
Sean Connery is the detective coming in to try and figure out what the fuck happened.
This looks like there's been a lot of back pushy in this room. It smells like back pushy. Oh. His offsider is back pushing galore. That's a really bad Connery, I just want to say. That's not a good one.
It's okay. It's passable.
It's acknowledged.
Considering that he only ever did his own voice in every movie.
Which is funny, isn't it?
It's so good. The story of the Untouchables where they're like, can you talk like a Chicago guy? It's like, yeah, no worries.
Yeah.
And then just didn't. And you can just imagine.
No, he's supposed to be Irish, wasn't he? And he went, yep, this is it.
No, because like, no, Chicago, he's Elliot Ness, right?
No, he's not Elliot Ness. That's, that's Kevin Costner.
That's Kevin Costner. Yeah. But yeah, whatever accent he's supposed to do, he just did that one. And I can't remember the director for the life of me.
Brian De Palma.
Brian De Palma would have, I imagine, just was like, huh. Well, what am I going
to
do?
Yeah, I believe he was asked, and his character is heavily written as an Irish cop.
Yeah.
And he was just like, I know. Yep. And they're like, that's not it. And he goes, whatever, deal with it. And then he won an Oscar.
And he won an Oscar.
Fantastic.
But yeah, so I think you're right, though, Damon. Mm. We probably need to step back and be like, okay, it's not the same plot. Maybe it's the version of Men that we wished we got, which is that it's a folk horror.
Yeah.
It's a weird town.
Right.
We're going to be sacrificed to the Green Man, who's a guy covered in needles. How do we survive? Oh boy, I reckon it's tough.
I think I just want to also quickly add that him like cutting and putting all those little cuttings of tree leaves and flowers and stuff in his face, I thought that was actually, again, awesome. Mm. And then the way it actually started to bloom and he became the Green Man. There was such a good movie hidden in this movie that I wish we had seen.
Yep.
And so, if we're going to play in that movie, I don't know. We brace the green man. We all end up skipping through the woods as three green boys.
Well, yeah. Do we just get a back pussy and roam free in the woods?
I want to keep back pussy out of our okay.
I was scenario. Thinking about using my two fists, back and pussy, and just punching the shit out of every Rory Kinnear in that village.
Here's the thing, right?
Yes. I don't fear Rory Kinnear. I'll fight my way through that village. I'm getting out. I'm fucking getting out.
I would love to see you take on the kid version of Rory Kinnear.
He's the first one I'd bash.
You don't even, at this point, you don't even know something's wrong.
No, I'd see that little fucking, I'd be like, look at that weird faced fucking kid. No, thanks.
I'm going to go, look at it. I'm going to beat the shit out of this CGI kid. Kick the fuck out of him. And then you beat him up and the priest runs out and you go, oh, here we go. Yeah. Father, cop this in the nuts.
This dickhead.
You're not using him. Bang. Yeah. Kill him. Kick him so hard, his balls turn into a back pussy. That's what you want.
We've created a monster. Garland has created a monster.
Yeah.
And that monster is men.
Yeah.
That's all the scary talk we have for this episode. I've been Damien.
I've been Sean.
I've been Sean Connery.
And if you scaredy listeners have any comments, I'd like to say hi. You can email us at 3scaredboys@gmail.com or find us on Twitter at scaredyboys or individually. I'm at Midday Pajamas.
I'm at Carney from 55.
I'm at Awkward Trade.
Stay scared, everyone.
Look at that weird-faced fucking kid. No thanks.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
It's the question that's on everyone's mind. How do you live a good life? Is it about work, health, or relationships? What about happiness, meaning, and money? What really matters? And how can you dramatically improve all of these things? These are the questions we explore every week on the top-ranked podcast, Good Life Project, hosted by award-winning author and perpetual seeker, Jonathan Fields, which also happens to be me. Every week, I sit down with world-renowned researchers, experts, and scions of art and industry on the Good Life Project podcast. This week, in fact, we're sharing a fantastic conversation with the author, Elizabeth Gilbert, about a single practice that changed her life. Listen to the Good Life Project podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.